Hello, everyone. It's your host, Dacia. If music education had a dream of what it could be, it would be a place that we're going to travel to in today's episode. Close your eyes with me, if you will, as we travel to the San Jacinto Mountains in Southern California, southeast of Los Angeles and not far from the Joshua Tree National Forest. We go up, up, up into the mountains. We're at 5,000 feet now. What's that over there? That collection of buildings? Why, I think it's a campus of some sort. As we arrive on site, we realize that we've reached the pinnacle, not of the mountain, but of music education. Welcome to Idlewild Arts, a residential arts high school. So basically FAME, but like in the mountains. Within this magical place, young people who study music are immersed in it, but also work collaboratively with those studying other arts. Come with me, won't you? As I talk to some of the adults who run Idlewild about what life is like in a place where art is numero uno. Oh, and speaking of art being numero uno, help us become numero uno by subscribing to, rating, and reviewing the podcast wherever you listen. You see what I did there? March is Music Education Month. As you can hear from the music playing right now, music education is in need of some help. Or is it? Was there a golden era of music education from which we've fallen and can't get up? Or has it evolved and become a better and more widely spread version of itself? We'll talk to a range of music educators, administrators, and students to find out in these episodes of Classical Classroom for Music Education Month. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I am Dacia Clay, and welcome to another Music Education Month episode on the Classical Classroom. From Idlewild Arts in sunny, well, usually sunny Southern California, though it sounds like maybe not so much today, I have Doug Ashcraft and Pamela Jordan. Doug is piano faculty there, and Pamela is president and head of the school. You guys, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So Idlewild is basically, in terms of music education, from what I understand, Idlewild is basically the pinnacle. It's like the dream of what a kid's music education could be. Pam, how did Idlewild start? Tell me a little bit about its history and how it got to where it is now.
Well, Idlewild Arts actually started, it was first called ISOMATA, Idlewild School of Music and the Arts. And it was really started as the summer program of USC. We were founded in 1946, and I think our first summer program class came in 1950. And somewhere in the 80s, we decided to go out on our own and to separate from USC. And in 1986, Idlewild Arts Academy was born. And now we serve about 315 students in our academy who come to us from about 35, 36 countries. And we continue, and that's for high school, and we're boarding arts high school. And then we also serve nearly 2,000 students in the summer. So we've continued that program. And there that we start ages 5 through adulthood.
So paint me a picture. I've seen pictures of this campus, but I'd love for the listeners at home to know you guys are, as you mentioned, up on a mountain. You've got a small student body, an incredibly diverse small student body. You said like about 315 kids. But tell me where they are. Like,
okay, you asked for it. I usually try not to tell the story, but I love the story. It attracted me to the school. You know, when they were looking to start, it was following World War II. And our founders, Max and B. Crone, really felt that the world needed a place where people from different backgrounds and cultures could come together. And through the language of art and music, that they would learn about each other's differences and aspirations and hopes and dreams. And in doing so, they would go out and make a difference in the world. And they chose that place to be Idlewild. And that's what we have. We're nestled 6,000 feet in the San Jacinto Mountains. Our local town is no more than 4,000 residents, and most of them are seasonal. They come here really in the summer. And so this is a little hub in this mountain, in the trees. I think I've heard Doug refer to it as a treehouse, where the students students get to engage with like-minded peers and really just pursue their passion. You know, what most students are only able to do, maybe after school or on the weekends, our students are really able to do every day, including the weekends. And most of our students are boarders. So it's a very vibrant environment, and many of our alums really talk about their time here in nature, being in Southern California, that they're able to be outside in nature and engage with one another and just to be inspired in what call sacred land.
I think that's such an important thing. It's no small thing for the place, you know, that you're getting to learn, like what it looks like. I remember my high school literally looked like a prison from the outside. It was when they first built it in our neighborhood, I was just like, oh my God, that's where I have to go learn. But to be able to be in nature and to be just steeped in art all day, I mean, that's gotta stick with a person and just shape their brains. Is it competitive to get into Idlewild?
Yeah, it is. Every student has to submit an audition for the music department, certainly, but for the other disciplines as well. We have the other arts here. We have theater and visual arts and dance and, you know, all of those disciplines. So everybody has to submit a portfolio or an audition, and as well as their transcripts and show that they're strong enough students to be able to handle the curriculum, really double curriculum that we're going to provide for them. But I would say that your idea of competitiveness, I would say that it pretty much stops there, because when Pam was speaking about the school and how the greater foundation was founded back in the 40s, I was thinking about when the Arts High School, the Academy, was founded in the 80s, that founding vision really formed our music department in the Academy. The summer always featured a really enormous festival orchestra experience. And so the Academy then went in the other direction, and we have a more of a chamber-sized experience. So we have a little chamber orchestra. We have lots of chamber groups and all of that. But one of the great benefits of that is the kids all know each other very well, and the faculty all know the students very well. And there's no competition. We don't have a situation where we have kids winning seats, the principal seats in the orchestra. We pass that around equally, so the kids learn shared responsibility both to the school and to each other. So I think that has created a very nurturing and healthy way to train a young musician.
So say I'm a student and I get into Idlewild to study piano. What does my educational experience look like?
Well, we have the traditional classical training that many schools do. We have private lessons, we have chamber music, we have orchestra, we have, of course, private lessons on every instrument and all of that, which is a feature that lots of kids in music education, you know, in other places, in a normal high school, there may not be a person who specializes in oboe playing. In fact, there's probably not a person who specializes in oboe playing. So every student having that kind of experience here is special, and it raises the level, of course. But I would think another special, truly special feature of being here is the fact that there are all of those students from the other disciplines that they work with. And, you know, I don't think, you know, I'd never really experienced a dancer until I came here as a faculty member. I'd never seen a dance class or even a live performance. So I think it's really special that our students who are receiving a traditional classical training have the opportunity to go to a performance and see their dancer colleagues dance to classical music, or an opportunity for a kid to play for one of their friends' films that they've made, or even write the score.
The notion of studying literature with other artists, with visual artists and dancers and filmmakers and musicians, or being in an anatomy class where suddenly that those topics, those subjects just become more relevant because they're so relevant to your peers. We have a program, Art and Society, where students are doing very meaningful things to them, and we have a symposium with with that. For instance, our symposium this year focused on homelessness, and we actually brought in a homeless choir from San Diego, and our students really just got to interact with them, hear their stories, and you know, that's going to inspire them as artists, whether that's musician or mm-hmm. or a visual artist. It's just an immersive environment.
That's so comprehensive.
Yes.
When we were talking about doing this podcast, I looked at some of our alumni from our music program, and I you know, of course, I it's always fun to look and be reminded of kids who've been here over the years, and you know, we have, of course, string players and wind players and percussionists and all the big, you know, orchestras of the world, you know, the LA Phil and the New York Philharmonic and places like that, just what, you know, one would expect from a classical training. But as I looked at our list, I was also struck by the number of classically trained kids, not kids anymore, but who have broken free, I guess I might say, and they've pushed the boundaries in some way. We have one alum, her name is Claire Chase, and she was a brilliant classical flutist when I taught her when she was here in the late 90s. And she's gone on, she's a MacArthur Fellow now, and she won the Avery Fisher Prize. But she's made her career not in the traditional classical flute playing world. She founded the International Contemporary Ensemble, and after that was when she was awarded the MacArthur Grant. And she is actively involved out there in the music world in pushing music forward. Not just playing the standard repertoire and not even just commissioning new works, but pushing the entire genre into a new 21st century place.
That's incredible. She went on to take it to new heights.
And we have other kids that are doing the same sorts of thing. They're either inventing new musics. One of our classical percussionists, he's now not a classical percussionist, but is part of the band Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros. But in his own time, he records solo music, and he's inventing a new music that he calls ambient meditative minimalist music. And it's basically music that he has invented, I guess I would say, using non-traditional instruments to calm the nervous system and help bring a state of peace in people. So I think it's this education that Pam was talking about, having all of these people here together with different views, and not to mention they're from countries all over the world. We're not just talking about American kids here. So they get this world vision that helps them push forward.
So, you know, I saw on your website, Doug, that a whopping 100% of the students from Idlewild go to college. Are they all going into their chosen arts at Idlewild, or are they doing other things that one might not expect with those degrees?
All of the above. I look at these stats every year and see what our students are doing. About 93% of them really stay in the area that they studied here. A fair number of them, maybe about 30%, really seek conservatories like Juilliard or Curtis. But a number of them look for, you know, music schools within universities. But it's interesting because we have to remember that these students are studying so intensely at the high school level, and you have to prepare them for any career they or any direction they choose. And I know in recent years, we had a beautiful musician 2 years ago, a beautiful classical pianist, but I think she came here to study jazz guitar. and she was outstanding in everything that she did, really. And then she went on to Swarthmore, and she's not studying music, though she's continuing to pursue it. So you just never know. What we're looking for is to help inform their choices as they go forward.
Yeah, we made it a priority in our music department to make sure that the students not only study the great masters that we all know, and that it's important that they study, but also living composers, not just modern music of the 20th century, but composers that are actually living and writing now. And so for years, we've commissioned works by important composers for our orchestra and performed concerts of this music and had the composers present. We've had Richard Danielpour here. We've had Martin Bresnik and other people who have not written for the orchestra, but just came because they wrote something that we performed and we invited them, because that's not an experience that most young musicians get, in actually having a dialogue with the person who actually wrote the music and to understand what they're right. trying to communicate through their printed score. So, you know, it's been a very rich experience. And that along with, we also think that it's important that our students have an opportunity to collaborate with working, you know, soloists out in the world. So, you know, we've had many people here like Hilary Hahn, the wonderful violinist, or David Chiffrin, the clarinet player, or, you know, the list for that goes on and on. But we think it's important that the students, you can hear one time, one of my favorite stories, is we had the Moreau Quartet was here, a wonderful string quartet, and they were working with our students, and we programmed the Mendelssohn Octet for strings, which is basically two string quartets together, and we didn't mix them up. We had the students on one side and the professionals on the other side. And the last movement, I remember watching the first rehearsal, it starts with a very fast and difficult cello solo for one of the cello players. The student had it first, and he played it very well and competently, but then the guy from the Moreau Quartet played it, and it was like the energy level in the room shot up 300%. They all sat up straighter. Their playing got an edge to it, and you know, it's something that we do say in classical music is, if you want to improve, just play with somebody better than you, right? So it was an amazing moment, but that's something that we are committed to.
That's incredible. I've heard of programs like that where young people get to play next to professional musicians, and I really love that insight into why that helps someone's performance. You know, a wise person once told me that if you love someone, you should donate money to them. That's had mixed results for me and tends to weird people out, like on an interpersonal level, but I want to pass that advice on to you here now about our podcast. If you love a podcast, ours for example, donate money to it. If it comes back to you, you'll know that you had a part in making that happen. Beautiful, right? All you have to do is go to classicalclassroomshow.com and find the little tip jar button in the upper right-hand corner. You can make a one-time or recurring gift for any amount you like. While you're hanging out on our website, I'm sure you will notice that it is mighty fun. Our friends at New Y made it, and they can make one for you too. They can also help you promote your business. To find out more about New Y, go to classicalclassroomshow.com/NW. That's N as in new, and W as in Y. And now back to my chat with Doug Ashcraft and Pamela Jordan from Idlewild Arts. I want to just broaden our scope a little bit, because part of why I'm doing these episodes about music education is to try to get a realistic picture of what the deal is with music education in the U.S. You know, I hear horror stories, and then I hear incredible stories of these like really innovative programs in places like Idlewild. So, Pam, as an administrator and a person with her finger kind of on the pulse of this world of arts education, where do we stand right now?
Wow, I kind of ducked, hoping you'd go to Doug on that one.
I'll take either.
it's really interesting. I think that One of the things that's encouraging working in a school like this is that you see young musicians who are already studying classical music and have a passion to pursue that. And what we need more of is places for them to be able to do that and opportunities for them to be able to do that. But I actually stand a little hopeful and optimistic in that. You know, if we look back 20 years, even 10 years, we would not see very many strong educational outreach programs from professional organizations, professional arts organizations like LA Phil. And now when we look back, we see programs like YOLA. We see, you know, every major city has very robust educational programs, and they are going into the schools where the schools may not necessarily be able to provide these programs. These professional artists are going into schools and making a difference. And I think what we're seeing at a school like this is that these students are coming in prepared. They're coming in having played, you know, studied their instrument with very, very capable instructors, able to take our auditions. So I'm actually encouraged by it. I think that we need more of it. I think not just for the sake of classical music and music in general, but we also know in 21st century education that we really do have to teach students to be creative and to be innovative. And I can't think of a better way to do that than studying art and music.
You know, I'm so glad that you said what you just said, because that's one of the things that, you know, when I hear terrible stories of you know, places not having music education. Like, I just had, that was just basically part of what I did when I was a kid in public school. I was not at a fancy school, but it was always part of things. And so I've heard about kids not having it, but then, you know, and it's hard for me to parse out whether or not I just am lucky and get to talk to amazing musicians all the time who happen to be benevolent and do all of this outreach, educational outreach. But my picture of music education is that, like, okay, maybe it's not in schools in the same sort of official way that it once was, but there are all of these programs and people who have kind of rushed in to fill that void. Would you say that that's accurate?
I would. I mean, I know that, you know, schools are very challenged to provide the resources for all the things that they have to do. But young people, young musicians, older musicians, they really care about that future. And they are doing some very, very interesting things that both adding to the school as teaching artists, after school, weekend programs. So you're right, it's a different way of delivering that. But when we see students who do come with enough training to understand that they want to pursue this, I think there are some very impressive and important things happening in the training that's being provided. And I really credit a lot of the individual artists, teaching artists, and the arts organizations that are really putting an effort toward education today.
So, Doug, tell me briefly why it is that music and arts education, why is that important for people?
Well, I think it's important to balance a student's academic education, which, by the way, can also be filled with art and is wonderful when it is. I think it gives a student another way to see the world. And I think I always feel like I can maybe not know what it's like to experience something that another human being has experienced, like the death of someone close to them or whatever. But through art and through music making, I can empathize with that. I can understand what it might feel like if I've experienced the art. If you've seen a play that deals with a certain difficult topic, you can better understand what it might be to go through that. And I think that an arts training, arts opportunities at this age helps make the kids be better people because of that. And I think that's why it's so important in every school and in every educational situation, not just like what we're doing here, but any sort of education like that.
I would add something to that. I think Doug is absolutely right. And, you know, one of the hallmarks of 21st century education is that we recognize that we need to teach young people empathy in this day and age. And it really is an important part of studying music, where you learn attributes like that. But I would also say that studying the arts, studying music, it teaches students a number of things. It teaches them divergent thinking, holding competing ideas together and being able to think through that towards solutions. They're going to need that as a skill as they go forward. It teaches them to, I call it, to make the invisible visible, how to describe what others feel and know but can't see. An artist, a musician, can bring that to light and help you understand and help you feel what may be in academia or maybe in research that we weren't able to do. That's the way young people, you know, sort of think about society, think about environment, that they want to make a difference, you know, in sustainable issues or anything like that. So it really is equipping students to, young people to acquire different skills to be problem solvers in the future. And it requires different skills. We have to be able to have conversations across cultures and respect the differences of cultures. You can do that in a way in studying the arts, in art and music, in a way that you can't do in any other discipline.
Right. It seems like it sort of creates an inroad in a way, like the way that you're describing it. It's sort of like you can tell a kid, hey, you know, here's what it's like to be a homeless person. But if a student experiences that in song, you know, his or her own emotions and feelings and imagination come into play and engaging with that, with the music or with the art. And I guess it sort of helps you absorb the information in a different way than just learning rote facts.
That's right. I believe that artists are going to play a very important role in the solutions that we'll see in our society. You know, and even on a different level, I was just with one of our alums. He studied theater here. He went on to CalArts. He studied theater. And he's always been curious, and he's an inventor. He has over 106 patents. One of the things he invented was the LED track light bulb for GED. And he most recently, one of the things he's known for is the Ember mug that holds your beverage at the temperature you desire. It holds it for several hours. This is curiosity developed as an artist. And it's funny, when I was talking to him, I asked him, how did he come up with the idea of the Ember mug? And he said, every time at dinner, he was just talking too much to his wife and his dinner kept getting cold. So he invented a dinner plate that would be able to keep, you know, if it was your steak hot and your potato salad cold, and took that to the next level and said, wow, I bet people would really like this in a mug. So my point is, and I mean, I can go into sustainable housing in Bali with an alum that we have, but really that what equips them to think differently, to say what is the solution we need in the world, you know, to resolve something, and how do I do that? And then, you know, and I think about these musicians and being able to travel the world and see them playing around the world and playing with orchestra and making beauty and making you think. It's just the best of all worlds, and they can pursue their own paths and make their own choices because they have embraced the depth and discipline of music.
Well, so, okay, I am sold. I'm ready to attend Idlewild now. Unfortunately, I think I'm maybe a little too old. But I've tried to ask this question of all of my guests for Music Education Month. You know, I mean, Idlewild is obviously a very special place, but there are, you know, people out there who either can't get to Idlewild, who maybe don't have this kind of music education in their communities. What can people do to begin to, if arts education, music education is not a major thing in their communities, how can they begin to prepare themselves to get into a place like Idlewild? How can they bring a little bit of Idlewild to where they live?
Doug and I are looking at each other. Well, I'll let you think, because he'll have the great answer, so I'll fill in some space here. You know, right. I think that I think young people should take advantage of whatever is in front of them. I say this story. My mother passed away a couple of years ago. She was 97 years old. My mother instilled a love of music in us because she used to pretend to play a piano, but it was really a cardboard box. She did get the opportunity to study piano, and she didn't play professionally, but we all grew up in that. And you can see where that seed, I share that story because you can see where that seed goes. I think sometimes we can pretend to be a little elitist, but whatever inspires, whatever calls a young person to the arts, there's not a, I wouldn't say to go after it as this is good and this is bad and this is better and this is not. Pursue your passion. Mm-hmm. Look for those sacred spaces that speak to you, to speak to what's in your mind, your mind's eye. Honestly, when you look at a school like Idaho Arts, I understand it's competitive to get in and there's an audition process. But, you know, we teach you how to play an instrument and how to sing a song. We want you willing. Mm-hmm. We want you passionate. We want you going toward something. We want you to want this. And people come to us from very, very different backgrounds. But when you're able to speak to that passion and you've taken advantage of whatever was in your area, even if it's that cardboard box, I think you could follow that to the ends of whatever it is that you want.
So you don't have to come fully formed. You just have to come with a big desire to learn.
I'm saying that, don't get me wrong, Idaho Arts is an independent art school, and it requires an audition to get here. But pursuing that, you hear countless stories of someone who heard someone and it was just raw talent. It will take you to that next level. That next level, you know, eventually could be Juilliard. It could be a university with a great music school. But it will take you to the next step. And I'm saying that I wouldn't want any young person to be discouraged because they have limitations in their school, in their home. They have challenges. Mm-hmm. Do whatever you can to keep pursuing that passion that you know is inside.
I couldn't agree more. I would say the world of the arts and music is becoming, the walls between different disciplines are becoming more porous every day. And if you don't have an orchestra in your school, well, play an instrument in the jazz group or sing in the choir. Or if that's not available, maybe you could audition for the play. And that could be your way of entering the field. I used to be very much more classically rigid than I am now and have become over the years. And I would never, I used to run the music department, and I never would have thought of letting a student in the school who didn't know how to read music. That was unheard of for me. So I would send them away, you know, and say, get a teacher and do this. But now I don't look at it that way at all. We have songwriters here who come and they don't maybe know how to read music when they come, but they can write a song and they can record that song in a computer program that I don't understand. So why can't I teach that kid to read music, even though he didn't have that or she didn't have that opportunity where she was? So I think there's a lot of opportunity like that out there that kids can take advantage of and then, you know, hitch a ride and come up on top of our mountain and we'll teach you.
I love your ideas about how kids can, no matter where they are, you might not necessarily have access to the kinds of education that you want in the arts, but, you know, take advantage of what arts education and experience you do have in front of you, even if it's not specifically the thing that you think you want to get into. You guys, it has been an incredible conversation. Pamela Jordan and Doug Ashcraft of Idlewild Arts, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's been fun.
Okay, that does it for this final Music Education Month episode. I've learned a lot about music education in the U.S., and I hope you have too, and that it's lit a fire under your collective buttons to make sure that kids get music education and that they get to keep having it. For more Classroom, go to classicalclassroomshow.com, find our social media links there, and send us an email at classicalclassroomshow@gmail.com. Thanks today to the home of Classical Classroom, King FM, where on Fridays we all wear sweatpants, because it's radio, why not? Thanks to the birthplace of Classical Classroom, Houston Public Media. Thanks to Idlewild Arts and to Pamela Jordan and Doug Ashcraft for being on the show today. Thanks to the official animal clothing supplier for Classical Classroom, Olivier's Animal Clothier, where they make your furry friend look fetching. Thanks to me for saying words, but for most of all, But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.